Welcome to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, where for the next 26 weeks, we're going to be talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, for the third season in a row, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, welcome to season 3.
Oh, it's so weird having a 3 be the number. Right? It took me a while. I mean, season 1, whole fresh world, yeah. Everything's new. Season 2... took me 26 weeks to get used to hearing season 2. Yes. Just got that one under my belt, and now you're throwing a 3 at me.
No, it's throwing me already. And the 74th, I couldn't even get right last episode of the finale. If you listened in, you probably heard the weird robotic voice that I put in over it. I just literally ripped from YouTube somebody, like, you know the videos, how to pronounce? I went, how to pronounce 4th, and I took one of those.
You couldn't retape your voice saying...
I was too lazy, dude. I was not going to set everything back up, so I just did 4th, and then that was it.
I'm going to just do a talk-to-text of my entire script one day and not show up. Just send you the write-up so you can just hit record on that.
Even the riffing, just random stuff. Okay.
I'm going to preload some riffs and have you fill in the blanks in between.
It's been a couple weeks. Last week, we didn't talk about what we had watched. So we got 2 weeks worth of extra watching. Did you watch anything in the last 2 weeks?
The only thing that I have managed to watch, we watched together.
Yes, sir.
It's Nope.
It was Nope.
It was Nope. What did you think of it, Kyle?
I thought it was okay.
I also thought it was only okay.
Yeah.
There were a couple very good things, like the normal style.
Yeah.
It's there, obviously. Definitely. There were some really good performances. And what's the actress? Is that Kiki Palmer?
Yes. Yeah.
She was great.
She was great.
I thought OJ's character was just bland.
Yeah.
I don't even blame any kind of performance issues on that. It's just he's the straight man character, but also kind of shy and quiet, which I felt didn't make the most compelling character in a movie to exist.
Yeah. And obviously Daniel Kaluuya is a great actor who has amazing range. And this time I think he was just the character was so reserved that he didn't get a chance to kind of have any big moments, except in really small bits of excitement. But I found it was pretty okay. I thought that the filmmaking was exceptional. Some of the action scenes that they did were great and tense and had some awesome tension. But I just found that the result of the plot wasn't it didn't leave me that satisfied.
Yeah, I felt the pacing wasn't great.
Yeah.
And there was just some themes that they spent a lot of time building that I thought were going to be really cool, really sick payoff.
Yeah.
And then they kind of just didn't have a great payoff, which kind of soured it. But I will say, probably the coolest monster I've seen on a big screen in a long time.
Yeah.
Really loved that design.
Yeah. And that's not giving that much away.
No. It's a monster movie. You know there's something.
Mm-hmm. And the trailers are a little bit misleading, I think, too, which is intentional for sure. But I did like the monster design too. I thought it was cool. But there is one scene that directly is intended to mislead you as well.
Yeah.
And once that happened, I was so confused because I was that scene was really creepy.
Yeah.
And I was oh fuck, we're already here. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of undercut. And I was oh wait, so where are we going? And then we kind of went where we went. I feel like it's worth a rewatch. I think there's some stuff in there that I probably didn't pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
There is a whole predator prey kind of situation, animal instinct sort of thing going on. And I feel there's more examples of that in there that maybe were lost on my first viewing, but it'll probably be a while for me to get back to it.
Yeah. I would also like to rewatch this one. I'd probably rewatch a couple of his movies in a row, maybe even all of them, just do a big rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my roommates about what you're kind of talking about, and she offered me a good perspective that I think was what he was going for, but it just was underwhelming. And I think we both got what was going on. We just wanted more, so we thought we didn't.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, totally.
But that's all you know what? You know what else we watched during Nope? The weirdest movie going experience when two dudes fought in the movie theater. Because we're watching this at our local IMAX.
Yes.
And there's this little section, there's probably 6 or 7 rows from the screen up. And then there's a little walkway. And then there's the rest of the aisles.
Yeah.
And at one point, early on, maybe 30 minutes in, a dude gets up on the bottom side of that like walking partition.
Yeah.
He gets up and he walks to the gate, like the little bar
yeah.
that starts the next section. And he goes all tough guy, like, you threw popcorn at yeah. me? Like, you want to start something? And he starts going off. And then the other yeah. dude was talking quietly because he wasn't yeah. trying to fight someone. He mm. was just sitting there in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And then the guy, the macho guy goes, my phone was on the lowest brightness, bro. So clearly this asshat was just sitting on his phone the whole time.
Yeah.
And apparently the other dude had thrown popcorn at him to yeah. get him to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the macho dude punches the other dude. Dude.
Yep.
And then everyone else in around that area, because this was way too far down from yeah. us. I mean, we couldn't have done anything anyway, yeah, no. so we just watched the movie.
Yeah.
But everyone else around them like stood up, and then there was like exchanging of arguments, and they're like, there's so many of us, we all want you to leave. And then like he leaves, and a couple of people go out with him. And then it finally settles down.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the movie, we got free movie passes.
Yes, we did. They were like, sorry for this disturbance. Here's a free movie. And we're like, oh, great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like two shows in one. So now we got three shows in one. Hell yeah. Let's go.
That was creepy. So the moral of the story is, if you're ever watching a bad movie and they're thinking about leaving, fight someone instead. And then everyone gets a free movie pass because of you. And you're yep. a hero.
Yeah. You just got to pay it forward.
Yep, exactly.
Maybe then the next guy will fight somebody in your theater and you'll get a free one.
Yeah. Don't watch a movie with us because I'm going to throw down with you to help out the rest of the audience, get some free movies out of it like we did.
Perfect.
Yeah. What else did you watch, Kyle?
I only watched three other things in the last 2 weeks because I've been busy, man.
Oh, man, you've been busy.
I've been not watching movies. I've been watching movies getting made.
Oh, damn. Crazy. You've seen the other side.
Yeah. Molly and I watched Aladdin, classic Aladdin, cartoon Aladdin.
How's first Aladdin doing?
It was great. It's a good movie. It's a fun time.
I remember having seen the first like animated Aladdin. I don't yeah. remember anything until the last scene where it's scary because I was a young child. So the only thing that burned into my memory was the traumatic scary part.
Yes.
That was it.
Yeah. The other two movies I saw were new 2022 movies. I saw DC League of Super Pets and I saw Bullet Train last night.
Oh, how were those?
DC League of Super Pets was fine. I think it was a pretty safe, easy kids movie. Vocal performances were good. The Rock is just The Rock, and Kevin Hart was yep. just Kevin Hart. Like
those are the roles they're built for now.
Keanu Reeves as Batman was pretty good though. Like that was a good fit.
Did you watch that in theaters or streaming?
I did watch it in theaters.
What
yeah.
was the audience misc? Were you embarrassed?
I think I've transcended embarrassment going to the theater alone because I've done it so many times, but I do have moments, especially at the start and at the end when people are coming and going, where I have a small minor piece of self-awareness where I'm like, I am in a theater alone by myself, surrounded by just families and anything from 3 to 10 year olds. Like that was it. And I always leave super quick.
I'm proud of you. You shouldn't be ashamed.
Yeah. And I mean, like, people don't care. Like,
no one even notices you there. As long as you don't yeah. fight people, you're fine.
Yeah.
It's like right now, think of another random stranger you've watched a movie with. You can't.
Yeah. No,
you don't pay enough attention.
Yeah.
Remember the dude who fought someone, though.
Yeah. And Bullet Train was also pretty good. A lot of people are comparing it to Tarantino, which I can see because it is kind of like a contained, talky action movie. Like there's a lot of quick dialogue and a lot of like snappy banter between the characters, but yeah, it was a good movie. I would recommend it actually, because like I wouldn't rush out to it, but it is a fun enough one to watch. Yeah.
Sick.
But yeah, that's all I had time to fit in.
That's good to know, because I didn't have a lot of faith in that one from the trailer, so I'm glad it's actually good.
Cool. Well, we've had enough blabbering on, so let's get talking about season 3 and the movie we're going to talk about this episode. I want to quickly note that we're not including Spirited Away this season. I know it was released in Japan in 2001 and released in North America in 2002. It did win Best Animated Feature at the 75th Academy Awards, so we're pushing that one. If we do that season, we'll do it. So yeah, this season, we're going back 21 years to 2001, which by all accounts is looking like a really cool year for movies. Like season 1, there's going to be a lot of these that I'm actually watching for the first time. What about you?
Most of these. I did a quick count, and I think I have already seen 6, maybe 7 of these, but that is it.
Yeah, I counted as well. I've only seen 8.5 of these. Half is an interesting thing that when we come to the movie, we'll talk about that. To contrast that to the other two seasons, going into season one, I had only seen 5 of the movies that we were talking about. And going into season two, I had seen 24 of the 25 movies. So this is a bit different, but also pretty exciting. I like the seasons where, I mean, we've only had 2 of them, but yeah, so far I've liked being able to discover new movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked last season where I had, you know, established thoughts and was able to revisit a bunch of movies, but something different about watching something for the first time. So
yeah. What I'm really excited about rewatching these movies is when I first watched it, I was a child.
Yes.
Whereas like for the 96 movies, if I saw it, it was when I was older because I'm rewatching an old thing.
Yeah.
And with 2014, I watched it when it came out when I was, you know, either in high school or having recently graduated and capable of thoughts. But these ones, when I watched these, object permanence was still being worked on. So this is going to be an exciting season of vaguely remembering events in the movie that we watched.
Yes. But for the first episode of season 3, though, we're talking about a movie I'm sure not only have both of us seen, but probably many times, but I'm also sure it's a movie that our listeners have seen as well. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or the Sorcerer's Stone, depending on where in the world you are. Technically in North America, it's usually the Sorcerer's Stone, but my 4K Blu-ray copy was the Philosopher's Stone, and so I'm going to stick with that. You've seen it before, obviously.
I have seen it before. Now, let me pose you a question here. Have you read it before, the book?
I also had that question.
I beat you to it without even looking at your script.
I have not read the book, but I've been meaning to.
Yeah.
And I even bought Molly 2 versions of this book. Both were like illustrated editions of it. And they're beautiful books. Like they're so nice. Gorgeous, like big hardcovers with these gorgeous illustrations throughout. And I flipped through them and looked at the pictures, but I didn't read it. And so I've still haven't read it. I feel like one day I will, though. I don't know. Part of me thinks the moment's gone, but also I probably should read it.
Now, I have read it twice.
Oh, cool.
In the way that I have twice tried to read the whole series. The first time I stopped during book 2. Gave it some years.
Yeah.
Started talking to this cute girl who was really into Harry Potter. Mm. Gave it another shot. Got to book 3 and then tapped out.
Oh, yeah.
And it is definitely, in my opinion, the kind of thing that you had to have grown up with, because the books start at a very kind of like basic reading level where you're not going to get a lot of like drama or like nuanced storytelling. They kind of are like slightly more kid book than they are like young adult book. And then they progress into it.
Mm.
It took too long. And I was reading through 2.5 books I didn't enjoy. And then she rejected me. And then I'm like, you know, why do I keep going? I'm not having fun with any part of this anymore. So then I stopped there for the second time.
How old were you on both attempts?
Well, the first time, I believe I was in high school. Mm. It was like over summer of grade 10 or grade 11.
Okay, yeah.
And it was like, no. And then the second time was like first or second year university. Mm. I think first year university. Because it wasn't super long after my first attempt at reading it.
Yeah. Hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. With these illustrated editions now, it's one of those where like I could probably imagine it reading to a child.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of a fun way to experience the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I'm going to actively sit down and read them myself. So
yeah, I don't know if you need to.
How long has it been since you watched this movie, though?
Quite a while. I've only seen, like, I have seen all the movies in this series, but only once each. And like on a bit of like a run through leading up to the last two, because I never really watched or I never really interacted with Harry Potter that much. Like my sister was into it.
Yeah.
But as parts for the movies are part 7, book 7 coming out. I'm like, okay, I kind of want to get in on this zeitgeist of the century right now, this hot burning movement of witches and wizards.
Yeah.
So then I rewatched everything up to that point so that I could watch 7 part 2 in time in theaters. And that was enjoyable. That was good.
Nice.
Good. Yeah, but you, Kyle?
I've seen these quite a few times. I was caught up in the Harry Potter zeitgeist. And also similarly, my sister was very into Harry Potter because she read the books.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. How they both did, but we both didn't.
But they were 3 years older than us, and that might have been critical.
True.
And they're probably more than 3 grading levels, grade reading levels ahead of us, too. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Might have just missed that then.
Yeah.
But I got caught up in the movies. I don't know if I saw the first two in theaters. I think the first one I saw in theaters was Prisoners of Azkaban. But I had the first two on VHS, and they were also the first two DVDs that we ever bought in this household. So they were the first two that we moved to that new exciting format, which has since gone two formats leaped ahead. But I have them now on both Blu-ray and 4K.
Oh, but not the VHS anymore?
Actually, I think it's in the other room.
Oh, it better be. That's a treasure.
Yeah. And I have watched them a lot of times. Like, I obviously, during my youth, it was on repeat a lot. But I actually got a chance to rewatch them in IMAX. They did a re-release here a few years ago. Actually, it was at the start of Molly and I's relationship. She's obviously also a very, very big Harry Potter fan.
She's also British.
Yes, obviously. Yeah. And so it was kind of cool to go watch some of them. And so I think I caught almost all of them. I watched 1, 3, 4, 5, and I think 7 part 1. So I only missed like 3 or
that's not bad.
Them.
3 out of 8. That's an all right ratio.
Yeah. And like it was within like a week, like it was in a weekend that
there was a bunch
of them. And so I wanted to revisit, especially the ones that I didn't get a chance to watch, like the first one. Mm-hmm. So technically I have seen the first one in theaters. It was just when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And so that was, yeah, interesting.
Do you remember what year that was?
It was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So
I think that was what I asked that girl out to when I got rejected. I believe that's what it was.
And I probably told you about it too. I probably was like, hey man, these movies are in IMAX right now. You should go. That's hilarious.
That's when it all comes full circle.
Wow.
Oh my God. We did it.
Yeah. But they were great to see in theaters. And this one especially was a lot of fun. So
yeah.
But yeah, that was the last time I had seen it before rewatching for this one. The first one is one that I don't rewatch a lot, at least not anymore. I think I watched it a lot in my youth, and now the one that I revisit the most is Prisoners of Azkaban, because that's my favorite one. Do you have a favorite one? Oh, I guess you haven't watched them that much, but do you have a favorite one?
Prisoner of Azkaban jumps out to me because I think I remember the most. I think I was the most into that one.
Yeah.
So I'd probably default to that one, but I'd need to rewatch more recently to really remember them all. Because when you kind of sit through them, just like I plowed through 1 through 6 just to get them in before I watch 7. So I don't remember that distinctly.
Okay. Well, if you were interested in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or the book it was based on, I've included links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through those links, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general links to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen it or read the book and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you could skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, is a 2001 fantasy film directed by Chris Columbus and written by Steve Kloves, based on the books, you know which ones.
Yeah.
This is starring Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter, Emma Watson as Hermione Granger, Rupert Grint as Ron Weasley, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid, Richard Harris as Albus Dumbledore, Ian Hart as Professor Quirrell, and Alan Rickman as Severus Snape. This has a runtime of 152 minutes and was released on November 16, 2001 in the States. Kyle, what do you think of this film?
It's pretty magical, which is, you know, the best way that this movie could probably want to be described.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty sweet, also a little bit fluffy in times.
Yes.
That's how I would best describe it, because about 2/3 of this movie is just set up and being in this world. And then like the last third of it is like, oh yeah, we should have an actual conflict and plot.
Yeah.
And like, so they kind of tease it throughout, but a lot of this movie is just vibes. Like,
yeah.
And they're cool vibes. Like, I love being in this world. And like, especially the first one, like you have to introduce all the characters. You have to introduce Hogwarts, which in itself is like a huge character. Mm-hmm. And like, you have to introduce the concepts of magic. So like, I understand why they needed so much time to set it up, but it is kind of inconsequential in terms of like conflict and plot. So yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think having read the book, they spend a lot of time in that book building the world to a lot more fine detail, which you don't have enough time to do in the movie. And I think this movie marries the world building, the starting of a series that you have to see out to the end because you have children actors you're basing this around.
Yes.
while also like conveying enough of an interesting plot line that it works. Like it works really well for what it is, and it's a great launching point for the series. But like if you take this movie on its own, it's meh. It's average just because there's not a lot going on.
Yeah, totally. And like it's easy to say that like in hindsight too, because we're looking at it more now as a film, whereas then so much was about like establishing this world. And like you know, in hindsight, looking at all the movies and other stuff like games that came out afterwards, and even the game that's coming out this year, like this movie did a lot of groundwork to like establish the visual look of this world. And I think it had a huge undertaking in that. And I think it achieved that for sure.
Yeah, I think this did an absolutely fantastic job as a launching point.
Yes.
But if the series had flamed out and died after this movie, it would be so forgettable.
Totally. Yeah. And I think this, for a lot of people, including myself and I think you, is not the one that is their favorite. I think this one is easily forgotten. It is like obviously the start of it, but it is not the best of the series by any account.
Yeah. And it's also like it's too long to be a light fluffy movie that you throw on for comfort.
Yeah.
But it does have a safe enough plot and character development in that you could. So it's kind of in the mired in the middle of that.
Yeah. Speaking of a safe enough plot, should I read through that safe enough
plot? Please deliver that safely, warmly wrapped around me.
All right. Well, if you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. After Harry Potter's parents' death at the hand of Lord Voldemort, Albus Dumbledore and Minerva McGonagall, professors at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, along with groundskeeper Rubeus Hagrid, deliver Harry Potter to his aunt and uncle, Petunia and Vernon Dursley, his only living relatives. 10 years later, just before Harry's 11th birthday, owls begin delivering letters addressed to him. When the abusive Dursleys refuse to allow Harry to open any and flee to an island hut, Hagrid arrives to personally deliver Harry's letters of acceptance to Hogwarts. Hagrid dishes the deets of Harry's parents, his scar, and takes Harry on a shopping trip where he gets his wand, his owl Hedwig, and his other supplies for, you know, young wizard things. At King's Cross Station, Harry boards the Hogwarts Express train. He meets Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger, a muggle-born witch. Arriving at Hogwarts, Harry also meets Draco Malfoy. The two immediately form a rivalry. The students assemble in the Great Hall where the Sorting Hat sorts the first years in four respective houses, Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Slytherin. Harry is placed into Gryffindor alongside Ron and Hermione, while Draco is sorted into Slytherin. As Harry studies magic, he learns more about his parents and Voldemort. Harry's natural talent for broomstick flying gets him recruited as the youngest ever seeker for Gryffindor's Quidditch team. While returning to the Gryffindor common room, the staircases change paths, leading Harry, Ron, and Hermione to the third floor, which is restricted. There, they discover a giant three-headed dog named Fluffy. On Halloween, Ron insults Hermione after she shows off in charms class. Upset, Hermione spends the afternoon crying in the girls' bathroom. That night, a giant troll enters the bathroom, but Harry and Ron save Hermione, and the three make up and become close friends after Hermione takes the blame by claiming she went in looking for the troll. The trio discover that Fluffy is guarding the Philosopher's Stone, a magical object that can turn metal into gold and produce an immortality elixir. That was in the book and not in the movie.
Yep.
Harry suspects that potions teacher and head of Slytherin House Severus Snape wants the stone to return Voldemort to his physical form. When Hagrid accidentally reveals that music puts Fluffy to sleep, Harry, Ron, and Hermione decide to find the stone before Snape does. Fluffy is already asleep when they find him, but the trio faces other barriers, including a deadly plant called Devil's Snare, a room filled with aggressive flying keys, and a giant chess game that knocks out Ron. After overcoming the barriers, Harry discovers that Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher Professor Quirrell wants the stone. Snape had figured it out all along and had been protecting Harry. Quirrell removes his turban and reveals a weakened Voldemort living on the back of his head. Dumbledore's protective enchantment places the stone in Harry's possession. Voldemort attempts to bargain the stone from Harry in exchange for resurrecting his parents, but Harry sees through the trick and refuses. Quirrell attempts to kill Harry. When Harry touches Quirrell's skin, though, it burns Quirrell, reducing him to ashes. Voldemort's soul rises from the pile and escapes, knocking out Harry as it passes through him. Harry recovers in the school's infirmary. Dumbledore says the stone has been destroyed to prevent misuse and that Ron and Hermione are safe. Dumbledore reveals how Harry defeated Quirrell when Lily died to save Harry. A love-based protection against Voldemort was placed on him. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are rewarded with house points for their heroism, tying them for first place with Slytherin. Dumbledore then awards 10 more points to Neville Longbottom for having the courage to stand up to the trio, granting Gryffindor the house cup. Harry then returns to the Dursley for the summer, happy to have finally found a real home at Hogwarts. But that's Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Aww.
Wow.
Now, we talked a bit about how a lot of this is like, it's kind of average. It's kind of okay. One thing that wasn't kind of average, John goddamn Williams' score for this movie. Literally. Holy shit.
Yes, that was one point that I just put in caps. The score. Fucking Jesus.
Oh my God. Because it remains a banger for the entirety of the series. Like he built the perfect score for this. Yeah. All of it ages great. You go back to it and like it is powerful. They're throwing orchestras in there for like Harry falling and bruising his knee. They get an entire score put behind this with more power than the force of most movies have today. Like it's insane how hard it goes.
There's so many tracks on this soundtrack that are just all-timers, like that you will find yourself humming, whistling for weeks, and then will just come up in your brain randomly. And like John Williams, you know, hell of a fucking career. This, like, I don't know if this is this my favorite John Williams score. I don't know. Maybe
I kind of forgot about this one.
Yeah.
I was like, I watched this before I knew what, like, really, before I cared, before I got it. But now I get it, and he has it. Oh my God. This is a good score.
Touch here. And like, it set the groundwork for the entire series, like you said. And like, he didn't even continue scoring the remainder of the series. I think he only did the first two, but that was all he needed because he set the fucking tone.
That's probably for the best because he set the bar so high that all you really need to do is riff off that to keep going.
Totally.
If they kept bringing in John Williams originals, it might overload and overpower the rest of the series.
Totally. To continue on with the craft, though, I found that they had really impressive practical effects. Yeah. The computer effects are a little dated now.
They're kind of
especially the Quidditch real like body people, like real people on the on the broomsticks, a little dated. And the troll, when you saw the troll in his CGI form, it was like kind of like rough. Obviously, like this is 21 years old at this point. It's going to be rough.
Yeah.
But then they had like an actual troll puppet that was on the floor that Harry takes his wand out of. And that looked great.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they just maybe they wanted more wide shots of the troll, and so they had to use computer effects. But like, they should have made more use of that practical troll.
Yeah, like what I'm assuming is that they probably couldn't get the troll movement to look right or big or scary enough in the suit. And I don't think combining CGI and practical effects was at a stage of technology where they could make that look good. But yeah, like it's aged, but I think to an acceptable amount. It doesn't look horrific.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say when they have Voldemort on the back of Quirrell's head at the end, that one looks a bit more rough in my opinion, because they tried to do a lot more movement and it like is on the back of his head. So they got to like kind of combine that.
Totally.
And it has some low notes in there. Yeah. But like overall, the Quidditch match looks really bad now. And I kind of wish they just cut it. It's not incredibly important. Main point was just to cast more aspersions on Snape and set up the switcheroo between Quirrell and Snape being the bad guy.
Yeah.
But like in a forward looking thing, like that scene looks so bad now. Like, totally. It's not needed.
Well, and they did a great job with Hagrid because obviously he's not that fucking tall.
No.
But like they managed to do enough, at least on like stilts or force perspective, that like he looks that large, and all the costuming is immaculate. It's so well put together. And obviously Hogwarts as a place is just like so well realized. It looks lived.
Amazing.
It's got history, and like it's really fascinating to just like pick out little points of it. And like I liked that they did like a bit with the bricks. That was cool. I think they did practically for that when they're going to Diagon Alley. And then the whole bank, like those were all practical goblins.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
Yeah. It's like there's a couple things in there that I didn't think about till after we got to the bad CGI parts. They're like, that was also CGI and looked good enough that I just breezed right past it at the time. So they definitely do good work with what they got. And like the practical effects that go into it's amazing. The scene's so cool. They just do such a great world building job.
Yeah,
that it kind of helps you get past the child actors, because they're not bad. They are what they need to be, mm-hmm. but they're child actors and they're doing a lot of lifting in this movie. Yeah. So it's not going to be perfect because of that.
That was a great transition because that was the next thing I was going to ask you about was the children. Yeah. Because to be fair, what luck.
Oh
like,
my
the
God.
The fact that they got like not one, not two, not even three or four or five. Like they got like seven to
eight
great child actors.
Yeah.
Like Harry, Ron, and Hermione, obviously amazing. Like mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job, even like even for you know how young they are. But then even characters like Neville,
perfect.
Like Draco Malfoy, perfect. Ron's brothers, the twins, they cast Ginny in this movie. She's in one scene.
Yeah.
She's in the rest of the series. Like, granted, Ginny is the one character that sometimes I feel like isn't the best actress.
Yeah.
But she's used minimally. But mm-hmm. like to have these characters cast this early and be like throughout the whole series with none of them either going fucking crazy on drugs or some shit or yeah. like having just like turning out not to be a good actor.
Yeah, or just deciding they don't want to be an actor.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that kind of ruins your life for
totally.
A bit.
Totally. Yeah.
That's insane.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
To add to that though, the cast that they put around them, the adult cast, mm-hmm. also amazing. Like
amazing.
Perfect choices. Snape doesn't have a lot going on in this movie, but you feel his presence in every scene, and even like in scenes where they're not talking about him. Alan Rickman, fucking God rest your soul. You so fucking good at this. This whole series, like he's always been one of my favorite characters, but he just crushes it. It's amazing.
I'll even add the caveat that he's too good in this that it makes the rest of the acting jobs too noticeable. Yes. They needed to tone down Snape because Alan Rickman walks onto set with a Snape to Severus. He is just crazy power levels yeah. in this when there's still like... there's like young child actors trying to figure out their characters and really totally. Learn about the craft. And Alan Rickman comes in here giving the 101. This is what an actor looks like and does. It's me, Alan Rickman.
Yeah. And obviously Maggie Smith as McGonagall. Fucking amazing.
Also great.
She's got something like her voice is just so... it's just so McGonagall. I would never see anyone else as that character.
I feel like I had her as a teacher. Obviously yeah. I didn't. It's not possible, but I kind of feel like I did for a moment.
Yeah. And like the one unfortunate thing in hindsight is that like Richard Harris passed away before they could get too far into the series. He was in the first two mm-hmm. and then they replaced him. And I really like his Dumbledore.
I really like his Dumbledore too.
Yeah. I think he did a great job. He had a great presence and he has this kind of like, he's got like the perfect little sparkle in his eye.
Yeah.
That like he commands presence and he commands importance. But he also has like that playfulness that you kind of want from that character. And
yeah.
It's great. And the last one, of course, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid.
Perfect.
Oh my fucking
God. Perfect.
I love him so much. He's just instantly lovable.
Yeah.
Like the, like, first of all, you see him first crying about Harry, which like, obviously that gives you an emotional beat to kind of attach to him. But when he comes back to that scene later, when he's confronting the Dursleys, that is a great scene. And he completely runs that room.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
In literally two scenes, he absolutely feels like when you are a kid and you have a favorite adult, like yeah. that's him. And he sets that up so quickly.
Totally.
It's crazy how much he's able to imbue that. Like, first of all, he's a good character, feels safe with him. There's no questions about his motives, yeah. even though like he has to do some snooping around for official Hogwarts business. You don't care because you trust him innately from how he performs.
Yeah.
It's just such a good character that he pulls off flawlessly. Yeah. Anyone else there? And there might be some doubts to his motive, and that would really set you up for failure as a movie because he needs to be this perfectly safe, lovable, big old fella goof, and yeah. he is.
Yeah. I also want to commend the direction on this too, because like it could not be easy directing all these child actors and creating this space and making everything look real, but also beautiful. And I think it's shot immaculately. And the fact that the child actors are as good as they are probably a huge credit to Christopher Columbus.
Like, yeah.
I think he did a great job.
And like everything is also seeded with the fact that he knows he is only setting this up for 6 to 7 more movies.
Yeah.
Like everything is couched in knowing that it has to be a long-term decision too.
Yeah.
You can't just like focus on making this one movie really good, which he does do a pretty good job of. He also has to have everything perfectly laid for foundations for the rest of the series, which must be a difficult thing to do.
Well, and the series was still coming out at that point. Like it hadn't been finished.
No. Yeah. J.K. Rowling was involved in production insofar that she was giving background and future things happening to characters before she could write them.
Yeah. Did you listen to that podcast I sent you?
Oh, no. Did you send me a podcast? Oh, no. I didn't listen to that one on the road. Oh, that's okay. About that. Yeah.
That's okay. But yeah, I was listening to All My Movies by Dan Merle. He since ended it after this last episode because he did. It was so much, like, clearly it was so much work that he put into it that I loved listening to it and I would have liked to listen to it more. But, you know, it's a lot of work and I understand you got to do other things. But anyways, he found out that apparently Alan Rickman was getting frustrated about things that he was being directed to do by J.K. Rowling, not by Christopher Columbus, but by J.K. Rowling. And like it was because of and eventually she would tell him what happens at the end of the series, like where this character is going.
Yeah.
So Alan Rickman knew where Snape was going before, like, the rest of everyone else knew where Snape was going. And that was all to inform his performance throughout the series. And so he knew that Snape was like always, you know, good. And then had a thing for Lily Potter. He was bullied and had Harry's dad bullied him. Like he knew all that before. I think even the readers knew all that. Like,
yeah.
So that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he's so good at it too.
Again, too good in this, especially in this movie. He almost needed the direction to like tone it down a bit so you can stop making everyone else look worse.
Totally. Does watching this drive you to want to watch the rest of the series?
It kind of does.
Yeah?
It kind of reignited that spark for me a little bit. Like, I don't think I'm going to, not even just because I don't have enough time in my life, but also, like, I don't know if I want to watch the full run, but this kind of made me get back into it. Like, I kind of want to put on the first, like, maybe two or three and then leave before things get heavy.
Yeah.
Just kind of cash in on a little bit of fun and then exit. But, like, it got me back in the universe heavily.
Yeah, totally.
How about you?
I think because I've watched it so many times, it didn't have that effect on me. Sometimes I do have that sort of motivation to go through them, though. Like, I just as, like, a whole series. It's weird, though, because the first one isn't the one that I think to start it on. I for some reason, I always start with three. And so I will watch the first one sometimes, but then I always skip Chamber of Secrets. So I think I've seen Chamber of Secrets maybe twice, like since being able to like actually analyze it and like look at it as a movie and not just like fucking entertainment for like my kid brain.
Mm-hmm.
But then like the third one and fourth one, I've seen like way more times. So it's kind of strange, but
that's fair. Oh, do you want to slide into some reviews and such?
Sure. Let's get into the reviews.
All right. Well, over in the land of Rotten Tomatoes, the critics, they are going to be saucing this guy in 81. The audience is in 82. So in pretty tight agreement.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair margin to be at for this movie.
Yeah, I totally think that's a fair margin.
IMDb is giving this a 7.6 and Metacritic going a bit harsher at 65.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can give a movie with that score that score.
Yeah.
John Williams kind of went a bit harder than a 65 Metacritic.
Yeah. It's interesting because I wonder how many people's reviews were counted later on because I don't know if like things like Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes were around in 2001.
That's a great question. I don't know, actually.
Yeah, because I wonder if people's online reviews were counted later in the series when people were reviewing them retrospectively. And I think when a lot of people review this movie retrospectively, they recognize that it's not the best. And so they probably lower it a little bit. But yeah, that's an interesting fact that I would like to look up on my own time.
Rotten Tomatoes was launched on August 12th, 1998. But I imagine it took more than 3 years to get like full pickup of steam and people to actually know about it. So it probably is a lot more people coming back after having watched it later on than like real time kind of deal.
Cool.
Box office.
Yeah.
This got $965 million. Whoa, worldwide. on a budget of $125 million.
Holy shit.
This would be number one at the box office for the year. We're starting it big dollar edition.
Well, that's how we started season one as well.
Oh, yeah. No, we did do the first.
Independence
Day. It was season two that we didn't.
Yeah.
But that's because we're not watching Age of Ultron.
No. It wasn't Age of Ultron. It was Age of Extinction.
I don't care.
The other robot one.
Transformers garbage. But, Kyle, it is time for us to deliver the score reckoning this movie deserves. What are you giving this for enjoyment?
I give it a 4 for enjoyment. I really like being in this world. I think it's a great time. It's a good watch, but I don't think it reaches like perfect heights. And actually, I think it's probably a low 4. I didn't think that 3.5 was fair, though. I think I enjoyed it more than 3.5. So I think it's a low 4.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm giving this a 3. I thought it was kind of boring, and having, I think, experienced the books and the movie before, like, I kind of know there's more going on behind her, but we didn't get to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of light. I wish more was happening, but I get it. But totally. I'm trying to think of this movie on its own merit, and I'm sliding that a 3.
Cool.
For your craft score.
Well, we had a lot of raving to do about this. I think it was well shot. The costumes were amazing. The score, fucking,
that
its own is driving this up to the fucking ceiling. And so it's a 5 for me.
Beautiful. I'm going a little harsher. I'm going to go on a 4 for that. I don't want to blame the poor aging of some CGI stuff, so I'm not going to, because that's not fair. I just felt that, like, there, it just didn't fully wow me, even though it was very good, built a great foundation. I felt like I wasn't blown away enough for that.
Yeah, I think I gave a pass to the bad CGI because of the strength of some of its other craft elements. I wish they had used more practical things, because what they did practically was amazing.
Was really good.
So, yeah.
Execution. What are you giving that?
You know what? I had written a 4 here, but I might actually go 3.5. I think the acting is amazing, and the child acting is great for, you know, child acting, which can be so difficult. But I think some of the story elements are just a little bit weak. So yeah.
Yep.
3.5.
I've also given this a 3.5 for the exact same things you've identified.
Cool.
Good work, Kyle. We're in each other's minds.
Thanks.
What's your rewatchability score? Mm-hmm.
I gave this a 3. I think the series as a whole is something that I will rewatch quite often. It's probably not this movie, though. Obviously, if you're going to rewatch the whole series, you got to start with this. But I don't see this as my go-to Harry Potter to rewatch. And so therefore, it is a 3.
That is very fair. I'm giving this a 2.5. I'm kind of on the same boat as you. But yeah, I just don't need to watch this one again. I know how it goes. And if I'm watching this series, I'm probably skipping it, honestly.
Totally.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, you have given this movie a 15.5 out of 20 for a 77.5%.
Yeah.
I have given this a 13 out of 20 for a 65%.
Okay.
All right. Now here's a tough call. This is going to keep you up at night. Where does this go on our season ranking? Kyle, before you say a word, here's your list so far, top to bottom. Now, where are you putting Harry Potter in the Philosopher's Stone?
Oh, great. I think I'm going to put it between, but above. And so, yeah, it's number one.
Really? Okay. Well, I'm going to put this as number one then. I'm a little higher and a little lower than you on this one. I'm going to toss this right in the middle. It's number one for me.
This is the most fun time. The clean slate. Like, where there's absolutely nothing going on. This is where it's easy. I have a lot of respect for this time now.
I know. Because it gets so nitty gritty when we're on movie 23 and it's average. It's
like, yes.
Well, I don't even know where to put it. I'm going to throw this in the middle. Like, I don't know why I wasted my time last season recasting 4 movies from like 17 to 20. Like, I don't know what, but I felt compelled to. Now, we don't care about that. Next week, it's either the best movie we've seen or the worst we've seen so far. Like, it's not hard.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
With that, though, do you think that this will remain kind of higher, or do you think it will low looking ahead?
It's going to slide down quite a bit. I think like this at best is going to hang around the middle, but might even get pushed a little bit below that.
Yeah, it is interesting because, like we've said, we haven't seen a lot of season 3 movies. And so it's tough to say if we're going to like them more or less than this movie, but I can see this movie dropping a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Time for some fun Letterboxd reviews.
Oh, boy.
This has a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Well, that's not a 3.6, the average score for every movie on Letterboxd. So,
I know. I will say I wouldn't read too much into the Letterboxd reviews because there's a mix of like overly powerful childhood nostalgia and also J.K. Rowling review bombs.
Yep.
So I wouldn't really read into rank like the reviews of
Yeah, the score. Yeah.
Too much. I found 3 good reviews. There are 10 trillion in total. Most of them not great. Here are 3 of my favorites.
Cool.
It's Big Red, 1207, 0.5 stars. How does Chris Columbus direct Home Alone, then make this? Anyone who likes Harry Potter needs to Hufflepuff some bitches for real.
Oh god. I mean, in all seriousness though, I'm sure that his time on Home Alone helped him prepare for dealing with children like that.
So. Man, he only went from like one child star. No, we need three. Cheney, 0.5 stars. I hate Harry Potter. I hate how it always played when I was a little kid. I hate knowing that I was forced to eat pineapple pizza while watching it. I don't like Harry Potter. It only reminds me how pineapple pizza tastes like. I don't even like pineapple pizza.
Oh my god, there are packets of shit there. Really, holy fuck.
You just don't like Hawaiian pizza. It's fine. A lot of people don't. It's a bold pairing. It's got sweet and salty. Not everyone can handle such an advanced taste on their palate. I get it. It's fine. You don't appreciate that. Is this Harry Potter's fault? I fail to think it is.
Wait, are you a pro pineapple pizza guy?
I fucking love Hawaiian pizza.
I'm a ham and pineapple with that pizza. Yeah, for sure.
It's great. Sweet, cool. Salty?
Yeah.
All together in one?
Definitely.
On some tomato sauce and bread? I'm in. And lastly, Owen, 5 stars. This movie remains great. J.K. Rowling is still going to hell, though.
Yeah. Oh, what? Just the way she's tarnished that whole fucking series. Like, it kind of sucks because a lot of people have so much nostalgia and love for this series.
Yeah.
That will forever have the asterisk that she fucking sucks.
Yeah. I think without wading too far into it, the official Snubs and Dubs viewpoint is, shut up, you suck, J.K. Rowling.
You suck.
Awards time. Mm. This was only nominated for 3 Oscars of the year. Do you think you know what they are?
Score.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. If that had been snubbed, that would have been my biggest snub of the entire season.
Oh, they were on watch when I was going through that. If there wasn't a score nomination, totally. I was going to start... Calls, gonna start writing names on a list, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I'm gonna say costumes.
Yes, you'd be correct. Shooting 2 for 3.
Production design?
I mean, basically.
Okay.
Best art direction.
Oh, okay. So it's different now. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that's like shifted in what it means or if they just changed the name, but yeah, probably pretty much.
Thing. Yeah.
We'll give you that.
Okay, cool.
Good work.
Cool.
It didn't win. It didn't win at all. Nothing. Not even one.
Not even score.
Score was really good. Didn't win.
Oh, fuck. Well, I'm curious what the winning score was.
Yeah. I've already started making year-end notes, and baby, that's one of them.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Yeah, wow.
What'll make your blood boil even more is it never really got anything that big. It had a couple like Critics' Choice things from various sized award shows, but like overall, not really got much attention. Most of it focused on costume design, actually.
That's criminal. Yep. And I think in hindsight, it's easier for us to look at that. I don't know. But like even when you're in it,
yeah,
like that score is clearly above everything. I mean, I can't say because we haven't listened to everything else.
We've only watched one movie. Well, we've only seen one.
Whatever the best original score of the year was, they're on fucking watch because I'm going to have my ears fucking open. I'm listening actively to that score.
They better be packing heat.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch whatever one twice. Once I'll look at the screen and once I won't.
Yeah.
And just use my ears to determine if it's better than this.
You don't want to just like listen to the soundtrack? You want to watch the movie but not look at the screen?
Well, everything's got to be in its place. It works as a package deal.
Oh, I will say, I had the pleasure of watching the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra do a Harry Potter live performance.
That'd be so good.
And they had like little snippets going on screen of what was happening. It was awesome.
That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Edmonton Symphony Orchestra, pretty highly regarded too.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got some good shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Would you like some fun facts, Kyle? Can I deliver some right to your face?
Hit me those fun facts.
All right. The filmmakers originally wanted to use Canterbury Cathedral as a filming location for some of the Hogwarts scenes, but the Dean of Canterbury refused to allow it, saying that it was unfitting for a Christian church to be used to promote pagan imagery. Gloucester Cathedral agreed to take its place. The Dean of Gloucester, the Reverend Nicholas Bury, admitted to being a fan of the books. Nonetheless, there was a huge media outcry in Gloucester when it was decided to use the local cathedral as a filming location. Mm. Protesters wrote letters by the sack load to local newspapers claiming it was blasphemy and promising to block the film crew's access. In the end, only one protester ever turned out. Talk a big game.
Oh my god. Was it the author of Left Behind?
Probably.
That became fresh of mind today because our episode just came out the day we're recording this. Oh god, man.
We're talking about good movies now, Kyle. Leave that behind. The child actors and actresses would do their actual schoolwork in the movie to make the school setting more real.
Oh.
Also, probably just to keep them busy when they weren't important.
These fucking method actors. Jesus.
Let's just try acting. God. The restricted section scene was filmed in the Duke Humphreys building at the Bodleian Library in Oxford. They have very strict rules about not bringing flames into the library. The makers of this movie were the first ever to be allowed to break this rule in likely hundreds of years.
Oh, wow.
Dang.
And they even broke the lamp.
And they broke the lamp. They didn't even read a book while they were in there. That's a bit of a waste. Casting Harry Potter was the biggest challenge. They saw 5,000 boys audition.
Holy fuck.
And none of them felt right.
Jeez.
Producer and director Chris Columbus saw Daniel Radcliffe in David Copperfield, 1999. And showed it to the casting director and said Radcliffe was the one and that he was amazing. But she said they wouldn't get him because his parents want him to focus on schoolwork and not acting, as well as the attention he'd get. So they interviewed Harry Potters of different nationalities all over the world and still hadn't found him. She got frustrated with Columbus because he had had his heart set on Radcliffe. By sheer coincidence, the producer and screenwriter of this movie went to the theater and in the front row was Radcliffe with his father. So they talked and slowly persuaded him to cast Radcliffe.
Yeah, I've actually heard this fact before, and it is kind of funny and sweet that like Christopher Columbus saw him and was like, that's our guy.
That's him.
And they saw 7,000 boys.
Yeah.
And then he was still
without so even Radcliffe. Wanting them. Yeah, oh, geez. My God. This movie and the novel on which it was based is known as Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone everywhere except the U.S., I think it was like the U.S. and Philippines, actually. But this fun fact punts that part. This was because the U.S. publisher Scholastic had changed the title and corresponding text to Sorcerer's Stone, believing that American audiences were largely unfamiliar with the Philosopher's Stone concept.
Hmm.
To keep the movie consistent with the book, every scene in the movie where the Philosopher's Stone is mentioned was filmed twice, once with the cast members saying philosophers and once with them saying sorcerers or dubbed over. Most notably, one of the times Hermione says it in the library and her face isn't shown.
Oh,
yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Oh,
cool.
I mean, not a lot of faith in U.S. readers to know. Yeah. Like, a pretty like old folklore thing, but also not important.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. You're introducing so many new magical concepts. If you didn't know what the Philosopher's Stone was, you can pick it up.
Yeah.
You can get there.
That's funny. And it's weird, too, because like I was mentioning earlier, my 4K Blu-ray says the Philosopher's Stone, but the digital copy that came with it is Sorcerer's Stone.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Seems like a waste of time, but whatever. What can you do? But that's all I got for fun facts.
I got one fact. It's just a little one. Harry doesn't do like any magic. He doesn't cast a single spell.
He doesn't.
He only says up. Like that's the only one I could pick up on where he goes for his broomstick. But otherwise he never like fucking flicks his wand around. No flick and swish or whatever that is. No.
Well, he's shit at it.
Yeah.
So, terrible. Yeah. I mean, like, Ron can barely do crap either. Like, what does Ron pull out? Hermione knows her stuff, so of course she's pulling out everyone in the dictionary because she read it beforehand. But the boys don't care. Boys will be boys. They're not learning school stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize that until I saw a YouTube comment on a video that I was watching that says that moment when Harry doesn't do any magic in the movie. I was like, that can't be right. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the movie and it doesn't do any fucking magic.
Yeah. I love the scene where he walks into Quirrell at the mirror because it's like, buddy, what's your game plan here? Have you at all thought about what you're doing once you get down here? Because clearly not.
Yeah. Even when it was Snape, like, what was your plan when it was Snape?
Wait, you're going to be like, stop.
Yeah.
And then that's going to work. No, like you didn't think about this at all. And now most of your friends probably dead. Good work, kiddo. God, children.
It's funny now how like some of the scenes are like so memed, like the I had you looking in the wrong section. How could I be so stupid? Yeah. And the not me, not Hermione. Yeah.
Yo.
He's going to sacrifice himself. No, Ron, you can't.
One of the like top rated Letterboxd reviews was someone like typing that all out with like appropriate emojis around it too. Yeah. And whenever they write out the word you, it's like, yay!
That's a great scene. Yeah. Any final thoughts?
No. I got everything that I've ever thought about this movie out. So that's it for that. How about you, Kyle?
Nope. Not me.
Well, I don't have any. I just said.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to the first episode of season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, Facebook, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We love to hear your guys' thoughts on Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter and Jason is at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
I guess I've already told you about my condition.
Funny every time I see you.
You don't remember where you've been or what you've just done.
I can't make new memories. Everything just fades.
What's the last thing you do remember?
My wife.
That's sweet.
Dying.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Christopher Nolan's Memento. So make sure to watch it before next episode.
It's streaming here on Amazon Prime in Canada. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.